Oh, it's great to have your company. You're listening to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity. My name's Simon Smart. What is the place of faith in the public sphere today, especially when more and more people don't associate with a religion of any kind? Should religion remain a private affair? And what does Christianity have to offer our society generally? Well, on this topic, I recently interviewed Professor Miroslav Volf from Yale Divinity School in the US. He's a professor of theology, the director of the Yale Center for Faith and Culture. He's also the author of A Public Faith, How Followers of Christ Should Serve the Common Good. So this week on Life and Faith, we bring you a fascinating chat with Miroslav Volf, a leading Christian intellectual. Here he talks about what Christianity has to offer our society, and especially its understanding of the flourishing life. I hope you enjoy it.
There are strong voices today that would seek to rid the public space of the voice of faith. How do you initially respond when you hear that sort of thing?
You know, partly as a person who has grown up in a public space that has been forcibly rid of religion, I respond, well, there's some kind of ideology at work here, because social space clearly is not secular. Social place is pluralistic. Australia is pluralistic. Almost European countries are strictly pluralistic. And if somebody wants to get rid of religion in public space, I have a sense that they are kind of suppressing voices that have a right to be there. Now, there's the other side of thing, of course. Religion has to be kind of worthy of public space, and we can talk about that, but that's not a question of whether religion or not, but what kind of religion and with what kind of stances should religion be present.
Now, in that sense, are you sympathetic at all, though, to some people who fear the sort of thing that religion might bring in public?
Well, I understand fears, and fears are nourished partly by the memory of the past, where in large swaths of history and in many places, religion exerted almost like a totalitarian rule. Whole public space was saturated by religion, and in many areas, secularists bore the brunt of that. And so in that sense, I understand there are certain, if you want, exclusivistic totalitarian tendency in religion. I don't think they're to be feared today. Societies are multicultural, societies are multi-religious, and in that sense, it's becoming more difficult for a particular religion to exert this overarching, all-pervasive influence in society. So I understand the fears, but I think they're fears.
What about the idea, though, that so many people, especially in the West, have left religion behind? You can understand them saying, look, we don't need this anymore.
Well, that's fine for them to say that they don't need anymore. I don't need secularism, I could say, right? So this is not a question of what each one of us personally needs. It's a question of really how our common space should look and who should be allowed to shape our common space. If we live in a house together, I take it we decide together, at least if we call ourselves a democracy, and therefore something like pluralistic democracy that is sensitive and welcomes indeed voices of faiths is the only one that is respecting the rights of every citizen of that particular country.
What are the typical mistakes that people of faith make when they try to enter the public square?
Well, some people of faith hearken back to the days when one particular faith, their faith, was a dominant faith, and then their temptation is to seek to impose themselves upon a society, to push for their own particular views and position, sometimes following the regular democratic processes and sometimes even wanting to subvert those. I think that's a kind of malfunction of faith. In other cases, people of faith sometimes withdraw from the public space. And I think when it comes to Christian faith, but also when it comes to other world religions, withdrawal from a public space is kind of at odds with what those faiths are about. They are universalist accounts of the human good, and therefore they aim at adjusting, transforming mundane realities in some ways to correspond to the transcendent realities, and therefore they all have this public trust, thrust in one way or another.
Is that why it can't be the case that we can just make religion a private thing?
Yeah, I think religion has to be honored as what religion is, and certainly world faiths, certainly Christianity, is not simply a private thing. It's not a matter of my soul, what happens in interiority of my heart. It's not a matter of what happens in interiority of a familial space or even in small segmented community. It is a faith that claims to be faith for all human beings, articulating a way of flourishing for all human beings. That's what secular humanism does, by the way, as well. That's why other religions, world religions, do. And then the question is, how do these varieties of faiths, all having a certain kind of universalist claim, how do they inhabit a common space?
Why is it that you seem to want to emphasize the common good when you talk about faith in public?
Well, I think the faiths, on the one hand, are addressed to individual persons, but there are faiths about entirety of the world. What is significant about world faiths is, in a sense, you know, that I sometimes say that they're kind of the original globalizers. They, for the first time, articulate understanding of human beings qua human beings. But once you have an articulation of who human being is qua human being, suddenly you have a parity of treatment of all human beings, and suddenly your concern kind of widens from the narrow swath of interest in your own particular ethnic group to the breadth of humanity centered upon an individual. So correlation between individual and humanity as a whole is a hallmark of world faith, certainly is a hallmark of Christian faith.
Yeah, and what do you think Christian faith has to contribute then to the common good, even and perhaps especially among those who don't share the faith itself?
A kind of debate about, vigorous debate about what it means to flourish as a human being. Now in today's culture, increasingly, we don't debate this issue. We operate with almost like a default understanding of what flourishing means, and that's kind of fulfillment of our desires, and kind of what desires are is left to each individual to craft it in interaction with a variety of cultural forces. But it's not a matter of reflection. And I think Christian faith, other faiths as well, but Christian faith raises and wants to raise to the level of consciousness what it is to live a flourishing life. What kinds of desires should we have? What should we strive for? What kind of relationship should we have to the entirety of material goods? How should we frame our thinking so that, and acting so that, as a result, we have a posture of contentment. Contentment that can come then to the good of others because it can create solidarity. I cannot be in solidarity with others if I'm constantly addicted to whatever it is that I'm seeking rather than content. I can't even attend sufficiently to the environment and the goods of the environment unless I'm rapaciously hungry for whatever comes my way and therefore have no time, no interest in making sure that other creatures have their own well-being preserved. I'm one in many before God.
You're listening to Life and Faith. I'm Simon Smart, and we're listening to an interview I did recently with Professor Miroslav Volf from Yale Divinity School. In this part of the interview, listen especially for Volf's description of what Christianity has contributed to our understanding of the flourishing life.
So why Christianity? Now, I'm academic, I'm a theologian, I have studied philosophy, written stuff in theology and philosophy. I'm familiar with kind of arguments for kind of plausibility of the Christian faith, have been involved in those. And I think Christian faith is a plausible way to think about reality, one that requires kind of a leap in a sense of faith. But actually what animates my own attraction to Christianity is incredibly compelling character of Jesus Christ. I see in Jesus Christ the modeled a way of life that is extraordinarily beautiful, extraordinarily powerful, and extraordinarily true to kind of inner urges of and desires of human nature. I think that human beings are created for transcendence. And you find that in the Christian faith, then embodied in life of Christ, life that is for others and life that was also lived in the presence of God, God who was experienced as somebody beautiful, somebody close, somebody life-giving, rather than somebody who is bearing down.
To what extent have you experienced that also in the Christian community?
When I was growing up in my own family, I certainly would say that my parents, my saintly nanny, a number of people whom I've known in my father's church, some were awful, but some were amazing human beings. And those who were awful, we knew why they were awful, not because they were so closely aligned with the Christian faith, but because we all knew they were completely at odds with it. But those lives, lives that spoke about kind of authentic, free joy, ability to love notwithstanding, ability to see oneself as loved and accepted without always needing to put an iron shirt, always needing to edit one's own story, always needing to project oneself, sell oneself, but stand before God and your friends as one is and feel accepted. That's amazing things. Where do you find that?
In your book, A Public Faith, you suggest that there's, in terms of this notion of human flourishing, you say there's been a contraction from initially the infinite God to then just the kind of human community and then to the self. With that's come a diminution of hope. What did you mean by that?
Well, you know, if you think of the good as limited to dancing of your own pleasures and making sure that that dance continues, well, that's your good is the scope of your hope. Mostly then what you do and what you hope, where you project yourself to be, is to keep that dance of little pleasure and small dreams going. And that then entails certainly diminution of the good, shrinkage of interest corresponds to shrinkage of hope. And I think one of the marvelous things, and one of the things that I think kind of signature feature of the Christian faith is that it expands the scope of hope so that my hopes aren't my private hopes. Indeed, that my private fulfillment can be found only in the realization of hopes for the whole of reality in the presence of God. That's, I think, the great thing. So kind of opening up of the self into the universal and into God and into human, broader human community.
So there's a great deficit when we limit flourishing to just the scope of our experiences, isn't there? There's a cost to that sort of attitude.
Yeah, there's a cost to it, and generally what goes hand in hand with it is if I limit it to my own experiences, generally what I then think of myself as a kind of self-enclosed unit. My pleasure is my interest, my pain, diminution of my pain is my interest, and then I enter it into kind of contractual relationships with others and create kind of a relationship of mutual benefit. But what happens with such key human experiences as, for instance, love? Love can be a contractual relationship, right? There is at the heart of love is a kind of a reckless risk-taking generosity, right? And in order to have this reckless risk-taking generosity, sure, it's generosity that kind of keeps to certain measure, understands, but it's not reducible to calculations. And I think it's this kind of attitude of love that can be nourished when myself is expanded beyond myself. It's closed. If I'm closed, contracts start kicking in, and then I might have good contractual relationships, even good neighborhood relationships, but there's going to be a whole dimension of life which I will fail to experience.
Well, that was Professor Miroslav Volf from Yale Divinity School in the US. His book on this topic is A Public Faith: How Followers of Christ Should Serve the Common Good. For more of this interview, you can go to publicchristianity.org. I'll see you next time on Life and Faith.